Okay, I'd like to welcome you or welcome you back, as the case may be. Our topic this afternoon has been the gift economy, and we also have a presenter that specializes in the matriarchy and and several other topics. So the format for this afternoon is going to be we're going to introduce a speaker, allow them to talk with us for 20 minutes, and then at the end, we're going to open the floor for questions. We have cards for you to write down your questions if you would like. We'll give you an opportunity to pass those in so they can be addressed by the panel at the end of the session. So I'd like to call your attention to our operating agreements, which we went over at the first part of the session. If we could just go over those real quickly once again. We ask that everyone remembers that there is much wisdom in this room. Not everything we say is wise, but we all operate from a foundation of wisdom. I'm having trouble reading these. I need to walk over so I can see them. Oh, there is, okay. Okay, there are no wrong answers here. There are no right answers, only the best we can produce at this moment. Everyone will listen to the wisdom in others. Everyone will have a chance to share their wisdom and to be heard. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Group wisdom is larger than any one person. The sharing and inclusion of everyone's wisdom produces the wisest result. And last but not least, we ask that you either turn off your cell phones, silence them, or put them on vibrate so that they won't disturb others in the room. Okay, I'd like to introduce our first presenter, Heidi Guttner-Abendroth. She has a PhD, and she is, hold on, a philosopher and researcher in culture and society who focuses on matriarchal studies. She is the founder and director of the International Academy, Hagia Academy for Matriarchal Studies and Matriarchal Spirituality in Germany. She organized World Congresses on Matriarchal Studies in 2003 and 2005. She is one of the 1,000 peace women across the globe, and she comes to us today from Germany. So I'd like for you all to welcome Dr. Guttner-Abendroth.
Thank you, Hugh, for your kind welcome. You heard I'm from Germany, and so English is not my first language, and so I have to read my paper. I apologize for that. My topic is not matriarchy in isolation, but I want to make the relationship between modern matriarchal studies and the gift economy you heard in the session before about. It makes good sense here to address the relationship between the gift paradigm and the matriarchy paradigm, since Genevieve Vaughan has extensively supported further development of matriarchal studies at the international level. In Texas in 2005, she sponsored the Second World Congress on Matriarchal Studies, paving the way for the matriarchy paradigm to the United States. So, is she here? Jen? She's not here. All right, then I will read my speech to her once more when she comes back or later. So as a token of my gratitude, I dedicate my speech to her in her absence. And I dedicate it to all the indigenous peoples who have been my teachers for a very long time and still are. matriarchal studies fundamentally contradict the myth of universal male dominance and universal patriarchy. In matriarchal studies, we investigate and demonstrate past and present non-patriarchal societies. Even today, societies with matriarchal patterns exist in Asia, Africa, the Americas, and Oceania. No mere reversal of patriarchy, with women ruling in place of men, all these societies instead are gender egalitarian. Indeed, most are fully egalitarian. This means they are without hierarchies, classes, and the domination of one gender by the other. They are societies free of domination, but are stabilized by certain guidelines and codes. And this is what makes them so attractive in any search for new ways to find the creation of a just and peaceful society. With matriarchies, equality does not merely mean a leveling of differences. Natural differences between genders and generations are respected and honored, but never serve to create hierarchies, as it's common in patriarchy. Each gender and generation has its own dignity, and through complementary areas of activity, they function together. Oh, Jen, I just dedicated my speech to you, but you were not here. Doesn't matter. You know it now. Yeah. Each gender and generation has its own dignity, and through complementary areas of activity, they function together. This can be observed at all levels of society, social, economic, and political, as well as in their world views and faiths. Now I give you a short outline of the deep structure of matriarchal society that you can understand better what I mean. At the social level, matriarchal societies are based on the clan and founded on the order of the mother. This is a term of Luisa Muraro. Motherhood is the most important function in each society. For mothering creates the new generation that constitutes the future of each society. The value of motherliness, that is, the attitude of nurturing and caring, is the basic value in matriarchal societies. But it is necessary to clarify two points here. First, in matriarchies, it is not necessary to be a biological mother in order to be acknowledged and honored as a woman, because matriarchies practice the common motherhood of a group of sisters. Each individual sister does not necessarily have children, but together they are all mothers of any children that any of them have. This motherhood is founded on the freedom of women to decide on their own about whether or not to have biological children. So in matriarchies, every woman is a mother. Second, in matriarchies, mothering, which originates as a biological fact, is accorded such a great importance that it is transformed into a cultural model. This model is much more appropriate to the human condition than the way patriarchy conceptualize and use motherhood. Of course, patriarchies depend on motherhood just as much as any culture does, but they contrive to make the importance of motherhood invisible. This ends up making women and especially mothers into slaves. In matriarchies, people live together in large kinship groups formed according to the principle of matrilineality. The clan's name and all social positions and political titles are passed on through the mother's line. Such a matri clan consists at least of three generations of women and the directly related men, who are the brothers of each generation of women. In most of the cases, the matri clan lives in one big clan house. The women live there permanently, the daughters and granddaughters never move away from their maternal home. This is called matrilocality. Their spouses or lovers only stay overnight, a pattern which is called a visiting marriage. Might be very practical. Each clan is a self-sufficient economic unit. In order to achieve social cohesion between the clans of a village or city, complex marriage conventions have developed that link them in mutually beneficial ways. The intended effect is that all inhabitants of a village or city are related to each other by birth or by marriage. In this way, a society is shaped that sees itself as an extended clan where everybody is mother or sister or brother to all. Thus, matriarchies are non-hierarchical, horizontal societies of matrilineal kinship. This social order, based on motherhood, includes far-reaching consequences for the economic level. Most importantly, women have the power of disposition over the clan goods and houses, especially over the sources of nourishment, fields, flocks, and food. All goods are handed over to the clan mother, the matriarch, who, as mother of all clan members, distributes them equally among her children and grandchildren. In addition to matrilineality and matrilocality, this power of distribution affords women such a strong position that these societies are not merely matrilineal, but are indeed matriarchal. And here we can see the value of motherliness, which permeates the economic and social structures and is a source of peace for the whole society. As an ethical principle, motherliness pervades all areas of a matriarchal society, and this holds true for men as well. If a man in a matriarchal society desires to acquire status among his peers, or perhaps even to become a representative of the clan to the outside world, the criterion is that he must be like a good mother. It's a saying of the Minangkabau of Sumatra. On the economic level, this principle prevents implementation of an exchange economy while supporting the creation of a gift economy, as Genevieve Vaughan defines both types of economy. In matriarchal economies, gift giving is not just a coincidental, arbitrary act confined to the private sphere. To the contrary, the goods circulate in public as presents. The members of a matriarchal community enjoy perfect mutuality in terms of acquiring goods. In terms of acquiring goods, every advantage and disadvantage is mediated by social guidelines. For example, at village festivals, wealthy clans invite all the inhabitants to be their guests. These wealthy clan members organize a banquet, rituals, music and dances of one of the annual festivals and give away their wealth as a gift to all their neighbors. They don't gain anything by it but honor. At the next festival, another lucky clan will outdo itself, inviting everybody in the village or neighborhood, entertaining them and giving out presents. Since this is a general attitude, matriarchal economy can be called a gift economy in the true sense. Due to these features, at the economic level, matriarchies are societies of economic reciprocity based on the circulation of gifts. Now, the political level. The patterns of the political level follow from the social principle of motherhood in the biological or symbolic sense, which forms the big family of all the inhabitants, and from the economic principle of motherliness, seen as mutual giving and receiving in a gift economy. The political practice follows the principle of consensus, which means unanimity about each decision. They are well organized to actualize this principle. And again, it starts along the lines of matriarchal kinship. In the clan house, women and men meet in a council where domestic matters are discussed. Everybody has only one vote, even the matriarch, and no member of the household is excluded. After thorough discussion, each decision is taken by consensus. This is a basis for real equality. The same is true for the entire village. When matters concerning the whole village are to be discussed, delegates from every clan house meet in the village council. These delegates do not take decisions themselves. They simply communicate decisions that have been taken in their clan houses. They maintain the communication system of the village and move back and forth between the village council and the clan houses until the whole village reaches consensus. The same applies on the regional level. The delegates of the villages move back and forth between village councils and regional council until all individuals of the region have reached consensus. The source of all politics is the clan houses where the people live. And in this way, a true grassroots democracy is put into practice. The result of these patterns is that matriarchies are egalitarian societies of consensus, which clearly show how the value of motherliness also permeates political practice. These political patterns do not allow the accumulation of power. Matriarchies have no class of rulers and no class of suppressed people. They have no enforcement bodies such as warriors, police, and controlling and punishing institutions, which are the criteria of domination and characteristic for all patriarchal societies in the world. Though it doesn't help, I think it doesn't help much if women of today adopt domination patterns to establish their power. It only reproduces patriarchy with a female face. The level of culture and worldview. Such a societal system would not function as a whole if there were not a deep, supporting, and all-permeating spiritual attitude. At the spiritual and cultural level, matriarchal societies do not have hierarchical religions based on an omnipotent father god high above the world, a world in turn devalued as a veil of tears and woe, or even worse, as dead matter. In matriarchies, divinity is immanent, for the whole world is regarded as divine, as feminine divine. This is evident in the widely held concept of the universe as a great goddess who brought forth everything by birth, and of the earth as a great mother who created everything living. And everybody and everything is endowed with divinity as a child of the great mother nature. In such a culture, everything is spiritual. In the festivals following the cycle of the seasons and the cycle of life, everything is celebrated. There is no separation between sacred and secular, so all the everyday tasks have ritual significance. In this sense, matriarchal societies are sacred ones. So, we can see here that the entire societies are constructed in the image of the creative mother nature. This divine mother is reflected in every woman's being and abilities to create. Every social, economic, and political action is informed by the principle of the world's and the universe's all-encompassing motherliness. Therefore, on the spiritual level, matriarchies are sacred societies and cultures of the divine feminine or goddess. In this way, the principle of gift-giving, as formulated by Genevieve Vaughan, is clearly demonstrated at every level of matriarchal societies. It encompasses not only the giving of presents at the economic level, but also the nurturing and care that takes place at the social level. Gifts of intellectual generosity are involved in the consensus-building communication at the political level, where their efforts are always directed towards peaceful resolution. All this is embedded in the spiritual gift of a worldview in which Mother Nature is seen as the creator of existence and the giver of all life. This value of an all-inclusive motherliness and the matriarchal patterns are fundamental powers to create societies for the future, which, in these destructive end times of patriarchy, is urgently needed. I still have time. Yeah? Oh, 2 minutes, then I can repeat my dedication to Genevieve. I repeat my first words. Sorry? Oh, I don't have it here. Sorry. Also, I told with the first sentences that my topic is the relationship between modern matriarchal studies and the gift economy. And that this makes good sense here to address the relationship between the gift paradigm and the matriarchy paradigm, since you, Genevieve, has extensively supported further development of matriarchal studies at the international level. In Texas, in 2005, you have sponsored the Second World Congress on Matriarchal Studies and paving the way for the matriarchy paradigm to the United States. So, as a token of my gratitude, I have dedicated this speech to you. Yeah. And also, as a token of my gratitude, I have dedicated my speech to all indigenous peoples who have been my teachers for a very long time and still are, Barbara and Bernadette and many others.
Thank you, Dr. Guttner Appendrott. Okay, and the second presenter on this section of the program will be Dr. Barbara Alice Mann. Dr. Mann is a scholar of Native American studies. She is the author of several books and is a faculty member at the University of Toledo. She teaches, writes, and works for indigenous causes in her home state of Ohio, and she's from the United States.
Well, I sound pretty scary, I think. Neowashkanon. I am, Koyan Hawa, which is the women of the Iroquois League. And Neowashkanon is the traditional greeting, and it means you are strong, and I'm glad to see you. That's a song from the 12th century. From the Yingguo Shashe, who was the first head clan mother who created, one of the three who created the Iroquois League. And it is a song of greeting, and all it does, and its whole power comes from recognizing all the people as they come forward. I see the women coming forward. I see the grandmothers. I see the grandfathers. I see the young men. I see the little children. I see all the things in earth. Okay, and it is appropriate to sing it to you because it's an honoring song. You do not begin before you honor your guests. And so I want to honor everyone who came by to listen to the binary math of Jongheho, which is our sustenance, the three sisters. Now, I've been told that the mere fact that I'm going to have some numbers up there is probably going to make most of the room comatose. Please don't go comatose on me. It's just simple little math progressions. You need to understand that there is a progression going on there before I can show you some of the ways that we present the math, the binary math of the gifting economy. Okay. Now, one of the things I noticed was that, Jen and some of us have been talking for a long time about matriarchy and the gift economy, and obviously all the woodland nations, not just the Iroquois, had a gifting economy that actually predated the League. So it's been going on for a very, very long time, still is going on. And one day I sat down and I said, well, hit me with a 2x4, because this is binary math. This is not linear base 10, which is really base 1, don't let them fool you math, this is exponentially growing by 2s, which is the way you widen the gifting circle. It's not me and you, it's a never-widening gifting circle. That's binary math. And I said, whoa, we need to do something about this. Okay, now here's where you don't pass out. Okay, all I want to do is show you how the progressions go. Now, the first thing to understand about our concept of binary math is you cannot have one until you first have two. The basic expression of this two makes one is the interaction of sky and earth. Okay, and that is the most basic of all, and we each have a different way in our different cultures that we would refer to the sky earth, but that's the basic concept of it. Okay, the paired cosmos is your basic binary math progression. And when you're looking at this, you've got the one, you got to have the one because you got to make odd numbers. Now look, this is just the way Westerners represent this, and I just want you to see there's a progression. You go to 2, and you don't go to 3, you go to 4, because 2 times 2 is 4. And 2 times 4 is 8, and this is how you keep widening your gifting circle. And this is how we see humanity as existing as an ever-widening gifting circle. Okay, now, of course, Western linear math, they call it base 10. It's really base 1. Don't let them fool you. And the most you can possibly have an exchange with is me and you, me and you, me and you. This is not going to work if you're trying to understand the economics of what's happening in the woodlands. I'm going to actually go forward. I'll just point out to you how very, very Western and male that is. Oh, to the power of two. Okay, now who talks about power and things being in power? This is just Western math. Don't pass out. Don't pass out. All right. I just want you to see how the things accrete and how they go forward. That's all I want you to get from this. There's no test afterwards. Okay, now, there are some very important progressions going on here. Is this mic helping? Does this mic help? Okay. Now, 2 is the base number of the cosmos, as I already told you. And this is true throughout the Eastern Woodlands, and in fact, it's true throughout Turtle Island, which is North America. Now, the missionaries have really messed with a lot of cultures, especially those in the West, which were basically obliterated in 90 years flat. Because of the Iroquois League, it took them about 500 years to get past us. Once they got west of the Mississippi River, it was a 90-year run to the Pacific. And a lot of those people just got run flat by the missionaries. So some of them don't quite know it all, although a very interesting thing is happening. They're all trying to reclaim their old matriarchies now. They saw what the women are doing in the East, and they're trying to reclaim it. 4 is the base number of Earth. Okay, we should look at the progression. 8 is the next number up, and we're talking about clans and their halves when we're talking about this sort of number. I want you to notice how these things go up. I only put that in there in case they're math geeks. If you're talking about binary numbers, you have to include odd numbers somehow. And some of our important odd numbers are 3 and 13. These are important odd numbers. They fit right into the binary progression. I'll put all this in a big old boring paper that'll document all this. Okay. 2 is the base number of the cosmos, and you got Earth and you got sky. Now, this base pair is replicated throughout the culture in political and economic and spiritual and social. Everywhere you look, it is going to be replicated. And I've got the little arrows meaning that they are part of the same half. These are the pairs that will go together, blood and breath. And in fact, in the Eastern Woodlands, we aren't going to say so much sky and earth, which has all these Christian overtones. The traditional way to refer to that is breath and blood. Okay. For example, everybody has two spirits. Everybody who's alive has two spirits. You have the sky spirit you got through the breath of your father, and you have the earth spirit that you got through the blood of your mother. And the purpose of your puberty vision quest is to figure out how to keep those two walking in kind of the same direction, you know, so you don't have somebody running here and running there. You can always tell somebody that needs a vision quest. They're having a nervous breakdown, right? So when you get west of the Mississippi, they're more likely to talk about fire and water as the two halves. It's the same concept, though. But you also have others, like turtle and wolf. Wolves are a part of forest. Part of forest is part of sky. Turtle has got to do with water, which has got to do with women. And Turtle Island is obviously North America made for a woman by a woman. The serpent and the eagle, that's a huge one, both east of the Mississippi and west of the Mississippi. Slightly different connotations as you go down Central and South America. Women and men, I want you to notice that that's just one of the binaries. That's not the major one. That's just one of them. It's just a reflection, guys. Youth and age, another reflection. And you get to make some of your fours out of these combinations. Okay, now, we see each as giving back to the other. There's no taking going on. So anything from sky is giving to earth. Anything from earth is given to sky. And together, you get your base, too. Okay. Traditional art, and I thought I'd bring up a nice picture by Cajon Fadden, who's a Mohawk artist. If you look at any Native American art, if it's by anybody at all traditional, it's going to have the two halves, at the very least the two halves. And the picture you've got, I want you to notice that you've got the turtle below, and you've got Sky Woman mediating sky and earth. Okay, the original woman came from sky, came to earth, made Turtle Island. And this is Sky Woman falling through the hole in Sky World. It's a big, long tradition. And there is the turtle. Originally, by the way, it was Grandmother Turtle. Grandmother Turtle looks up, and the animals make the land, and they lower down. It's a very, very long tradition. I don't have time to tell it. But you've got the sky above, and you've got the earth. And the above and below stuff is not hierarchical as it is for Westerners. So don't think of it in those terms. But what you've got is the woman mediating the earth and the sky. Okay, now, we didn't have Arabic numerals, guess what? You know, and thank heavens we're not trying to do binary math with Roman numerals. Can you imagine what a mess that would be? Okay, what we had was different kinds of writing. And by the way, it's a lie that we did not have writing systems. We certainly did, thank you. We had earth writing, which is what the mounds were. We had wampum writing. Wampum writing is a character system of writing, which is a binary character system. Two colors, each character has two possible meanings depending on background, and also you had front-back writing, and every message had to be delivered by two speakers. Yeah, if I was doing this traditionally, there'd be another speaker up here. I'm delivering the earth half, there would be a sky half speaker. I'm unfortunately in the position of having to do both, which will frazzle you. Okay, now, we've got these different kinds of ways of representing this idea. And I wanted to show you what some of our writing and representations of these would be. You've got circle effigies. Now, basically, Europeans didn't understand this. Anytime you got an effigy, you've got its pair. If you've got the Great Serpent Mound in Adams County, Ohio, that used to have a circle. Why? Because this great horned serpent is the male symbol of Earth. So you've got to have a sky symbol to go with it, which could have been an eagle. It could have been a circle. They had different ways to represent it. You've got circle and square pairs. You've got circle and octagon pairs. That's very interesting. The eight. You've got concentric circle pairs. And there's some mediations. I'm not going into those too much. I won't have time. Okay, now you've got basic sky representations, a circle. Basic earth representation is a square. And I want you to see how these play out in our different mounds. This is from Mound City in Ross County, Ohio. And I want you to notice that you've got the circle of sky and the square of earth. Burials are in that square, or used to be before the Corps of Engineers came and totally destroyed it, turned it into a World War I training camp and did all kinds of awful things. And then they rebuilt it with no particularly good sense. This was made, this drawing schematic was made in 1848 before all that happened. So you've got the circle of sky coordinated with the square of earth, and you always had water to the east. If somebody wants to ask about that later, go ahead. Now, as things progressed, you would have the connection between the sky and earth being expressed. Notice that you've got the circle, and you've got the square. And I want you to notice the square within the circle. This is six. The number of Earth is 4, north, south, east, west. The number of sky is 2, up, down. So you've actually got a 6 going on there in the progression, which kind of gets important. When you see the little distortions here, that's mediation signs of fire and water. That's got to do with women and men. Okay, now there's another representational method, which are the circular methods. On this one, what you've got is the dome of Grandmother Turtle, her carapace, and here is the sky above. Here, you're just looking straight down. Here's her carapace, and here's the sky around. So that's another way of representing, and notice that, again, it's in total binaries, and look at how this is represented. You've got a whole lot of these. These are in Ross County, Ohio, as well. And you can see the circular and semicircular, and it's always base 2, always base 2. Here's one of my favorites. This is actually from the Portsmouth Group in Kentucky. And by the way, that's exactly the floor plan, of Teotihuacan. Okay, did I say that right? It's the Mexican city, the original Mexican city. Okay, now, clans come in earth and sky pairs. Okay, you have to have the pair. It's not going to work if you pair earth with earth, you're going to get insanity, because earth is the moral impulse. Sky is the intellectual impulse, and you've got to have them there, and they've got to be in balance, or you're going to have a doggone mess. Right? Now, for the Iroquois, and this is just the Iroquois, other groups will work it out in a different way, but what we have is the Turtle Clan, which is earth. Wolf Clan, that sky is supposed to be over there. Sorry, when we put it on this computer, a few of the graphics got a little messed up. I didn't notice this. This sky actually belongs over here with Wolf Clan. So Turtle is half the people. Wolf Clan's the other half the people. And you've got to put them together. So you've got to have the two clan halves before you have one people. And so 4 is the base number of Earth. We saw the clans before. The things have to square up. So you got your identity and you got your directions. I want to show you how this kind of math works out here. Just a couple of things. Human beings can have 2 identities, and everybody has 2 identities. And by the way, they always say, oh, what is your nation? Well, I'm Lakota. Well, no, guess what? Your most important identity is your clan identity, your mother identity. Okay, so you've got a clan identity and you've got a national identity. So you got that 4 and 2 together, you got another 6, okay? So you've got your Turtle Clan is your earth, which is a square. And you got your Wolf Clan, which is sky. Now I want you to notice that you've got your clan and your youth or age. So you've got 4 possible identities going on there, because you have not only your clan identity, which is composed of 2 parts, you also have the age, the younger and elder, which is composed of 2 parts. Because I'm not only Bear Clan Seneca, I'm also elder woman of the Bear Clan. Okay, so I have that elder-younger thing going on. I also have the clan national thing going on. And again, you've got earth and sky represented in each of those. So you've got this possibility of 4 going on. Okay, so you've got elder, you've got younger, you've got clan, sky, and earth clan. And you've also got the direction of the sky going on. Another way that you will see this 4 being played out. Okay, the direction of the sky, which is what we call it, that's the east-west axis. So the east-west axis has 2 points, doesn't it? It's got east and it's got west. You don't know where west is unless you know where east is, and vice versa. You've also got something called the split sky. Now, as far as we're concerned, that's just 2. That's just 2, because you've just got 2 lines that are crossed. So you got north, south, east, west. So you got a pairing of what's earth and what's sky. Okay, now, we're all well documented as having matriarchal systems. I only got 5 minutes here left, so we'll see what we can do. But we got this binary pair going through all the different aspects of life that you could have. As Heidi mentioned, basically you only got 4 ways you can look at life. You got politics, you got spirituality, you got social structure, and you got economics. Okay, so politically, you've got the earth half, and you got the sky half. And you can say that as male or female. Actually, male-female is a secondary discussion. You've actually got the sky and earth, which is the primary. So you got domestic relations belong to women. Foreign relations belong to men. Why? Because there are very few mothers with little kids who want to get up and walk over here. So we just tell the men what to say and then send them. And then if they don't say it, by the way, they are impeached. They are no longer representing the people. The women run the clan councils, and everything bubbles up from the grassroots, which is a Native American Iroquois term, by the way. The grandmothers know what the grassroots are. You feel that in your feet. That's why our feet don't leave the ground. Okay, because we can feel the grassroots sentiments bubbling up, and we bring that forward. The men, by law, cannot discuss an issue that the women have not sent to them with recommendations. And if they do not discuss it the way we like it, we start the process over again, and if they are recalcitrant, we just impeach them. Okay, we handle internal issues, white, that's inside. The men will be handling the external and the red-black. I don't have time to go into this too much. Spirituality, women have anything that comes from the earth, the herbal medicines. And by the way, over half of all medicine people are female. I'm really sick of this hollowed, oh, medicine man. Yeah, he only got that because some woman gave it to him. Okay, sky half is breath medicine. Breath medicine are things like chants. Okay, drums, that's men breath medicine, anything that goes through the air. Okay, socially, women's, the earth half, marriage and divorce, entirely up to women. The house, wood, all utensils, all women. Men's half is, I want you to notice that one part of their half is being sexually available, the visiting marriage that Heidi mentioned. Okay, and they make the houses, they make the wood utensils that the women use. Okay, economically, women's half, we own all the land. By law, Constitution, part of the Constitution, the women own all the land, all the produce of the land, all the fruit of the hunt, and then we distribute it. Okay. Men's half is the hunting, and that's only one-third of the sustenance. And I want you to notice that we got threes going on here. Okay, so what we've got here is economic, social, spiritual, and political, and we've got sky and earth notations on those as well. Oh, I'm running out of time. Oh, let's run forward. Okay. So you've got halves giving to each other halves. I don't want to get too caught up in that. All right, so gifting is a binary system. I think you can see from the exponential progressions, the 2, the 4, the 8, the 16, the 32. This is a binary progression. No one half can manage alone. No one half can manage alone. Equality, organize the halves. And by the way, that circle doesn't have to have the horizontal. I put it because we aren't hierarchical. I made it horizontal. That line can go in any old direction. It can be all over the place. Capitalism is a linear system, top heavy. Okay, why? Because all the goods are hoarded at the top, and then, you know, you get a little bit of sharing in the middle and nothing at all down at the bottom. So on one hand, you got this mutuality. On this other hand, you got this individuality. And I think just looking at it, it's pretty obvious that these are incompatible systems. So the revival of the gift economy requires a revival of the binary perspective of matriarchies. You need the binary math. You can't be doing this linear math. Now, I think one of the interesting things, you know where binary math is very heavily used? Internet. You know where the open source impulse is coming from? Internet. The more men are involved with the computers and those systems, the more they incline to the gift economy. I think that's a really interesting influence that's going on there through the computers. And I made it on time.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Mann. During the transition between this speaker and the next, raise your hand if you need a card to write your questions on. We're going to take questions at the end of the panel. So raise your hand if you need a card to write your questions on. Okay, we'd like to welcome our next speaker. We have Marilee Carl. Marilee Carl is an advocate for social justice, civil and human rights, equitable development, and women's empowerment. She is the co-founder of ISIS International, an organization linking women around the world. She was nominated as one of the 1,000 peace women across the globe. She is from the United States and Italy. Welcome, Marilee Carl.
Thank you. I'm going to be just talking briefly about ISIS International as an example of gift giving, and a few words about Peace Women Across the Globe as another example of gift giving. But before I start, I'm not as a dynamic speaker as Barbara, and so to prevent you from falling asleep, I would like to ask all of you who are able to stand up for a minute and do just a couple of very simple Tai Chi exercises. And so if you just follow me, or do whatever you can if you can't see me. If you start to fall asleep during my speech, you're quite welcome to do any of these exercises to wake yourself up. Thank you. I'd like to start by thanking and recognizing the millions of peace women around the world who, through their wisdom, their daily dedication, are giving gifts of peace. And I would like to thank all of the peace women who are here, and I would especially like to thank Genevieve Vaughn for her peace work and also for her work in making the gift economy and the gift paradigm visible. I have known Jen for many, many years. We first met each other in the early 1970s in Rome, Italy, when Jen was organizing a group of Americans who were working for peace. And I, at the time, was very passionately involved in a feminist consciousness-raising group, an international group, women from many different cultures and countries. And some of us had heard about, some of us were Americans. I'm an American, I live in Italy. And so we decided to go to Jen's group. And that's where I first met her. We got involved in various peace actions. But then after a few years, this was in the early 70s, when the Vietnam War came to an end, the group kind of petered out. And at the same time, my feminist consciousness-raising group, many of us had felt that after 2 or 3 years, our consciousnesses were pretty well raised, and we wanted to do something more active. So that group had been meeting in my home. It moved on to another woman's home, and I started getting active in other things. Now, here's one of the funny things, is that unbeknownst to either of us, Jen, at that time, joined this consciousness-raising group that was meeting in another woman's home. And we did not meet again until the mid-1980s. But by that time, Jen had become a feminist and had developed her theory and her practice of the gift economy and the gift paradigm. Now, during those years, I and a small group of feminists from different countries and continents of the world who were in Europe at the time, there were many, in those years, there were many women who were in exile, who were refugees in Europe from Africa, Latin America, and some countries of Asia. And we decided that we wanted to create a women's international communication organization. We knew that already in the 1970s and in the early 1980s especially, that there were a lot of women in all continents of the world who were organizing with a feminist perspective and with an awareness of patriarchy. And this was not a Western or Northern phenomenon. But we felt that we did not have the means of communicating and linking with each other. So some of us decided to try to make this effort of creating a means for us to link together. We wanted to break our isolation and to be able to share our experiences and to build solidarity among each other. So we called this new organization, this communication network, ISIS. We decided to call it ISIS after the goddess of creativity, knowledge, and as a symbol of the mother goddesses of many cultures. We had no money to support this initiative. We were working in our free time as volunteers out of our own houses. And we were based, for practical reasons, in Rome and in Geneva in Europe. But by the 1980s, we were able to raise enough money to open a small resource center and office in these two cities. And when Jen came back to visit, she had moved to the United States by this time. I think it was 1983, was it? But she regularly came back. Her daughters were still in Italy. She came back to visit, and at one of those times, she came to our resource center in Rome and talked about the gift economy. It was from Jen that I learned that the root word of communication is the Latin word muni, meaning gift. Jen says that to communicate is to give gifts together, thereby forming community. I realized that by sharing our experiences with each other through a network, women in different parts of the world were giving gifts to each other and creating a global gift-giving economy. I also realized that although we did not use the term gift paradigm, ISIS and many other women's and feminist groups and organizations had a vision of a world that was based not on a patriarchal exchange paradigm, but we're working towards the creation of a different world. Now, not everybody had the same vision. In the 1980s, 1970s, and 1980s, for instance, there was a great cry that went up for integrating women in development. ISIS critiqued this concept of integration of women in development because we felt strongly that we did not want to be integrated into a patriarchal model of development, into what we called male development or mal development. We wanted a whole new model of development. And we have the same critique of the more recent use of gender mainstreaming, which is sometimes used, is sometimes equated with greater inclusion of women, even though that's not really what gender is about. But it is very often used to mean greater inclusion of women in institutions and systems. And we feel also that we do not want to be mainstreamed into a patriarchal male stream. We want to change that stream. We want to change that system. Now, it's sometimes asked that if women were able to enter the mainstream in sufficient numbers, would we be able to challenge and change that mainstream? I'm not sure of the answer, perhaps, but I think that it cannot be done unless women enter that stream with an analysis of patriarchy and a feminist consciousness and a vision of a different paradigm. But honestly, sometimes I suspect that gender mainstreaming has been being used by governments and development agencies precisely because it does not challenge the patriarchal system. Fast forward. Over the past three decades, ISIS has changed and grown a great deal, but it's always maintained its original vision. As ISIS grew, it made a conscious decision to move its resource centers and headquarters from countries of the north, Rome and Geneva, to countries of the south of the world. The first move came in the 1980s when Latin American women who were working with us in the ISIS office in Rome were able, because of political changes in Latin America, to return to their own countries. And so we decided to gift them the networking and communication activities for Latin America and the Caribbean. And they took those with them and opened an office of ISIS International in Santiago in Chile. At the same time, we had thought about moving our activities, the rest of our activities in Rome, to also to the south. And we were able to do this after much planning and much work in 1990, and we moved all the rest of our activities and resources, which we had collected a very large collection of especially women's publications, women's materials, feminist materials, particularly from small groups. And we did not want to repeat the pattern of so many international organizations in which the headquarters are in the north and the resources are in the north, and women in the south have to come to the north to access the resources which belong to them. So we consider this both a practical and a very symbolic act to transfer all of this to Manila in the Philippines, and we have an office there and a resource center there and a house there which provides a space for women, also for accommodations for sleeping and eating, for meetings, small meetings. So if anybody is going to go to Manila, you are very welcome to go to the ISIS house there. In the meantime, also, we had also had an office in Switzerland, and that had become an independent organization called ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange. And in the 1990s, with the help of ISIS Manila and ISIS Santiago, it too moved to the south. It moved to Kampala in Africa, and it is now doing a lot of work in conflict resolution and peace building, particularly in that region of the Great Lakes. Oh, I just wanted to say that in Manila, we are very honored to have Senator Leticia Shahani as a member of our Board of Trustees, and she has also served as president of the board and has given us a great deal of support. You saw her in the demonstration. She is very much supportive of women's grassroots activist activities. I'd just like to tell you a little bit about one particular training program that ISIS is doing in the Asia Pacific region. Now, we had started off with print media and moved into electronic media, film, radio, and ISIS does a lot of training for women's groups in the south in the use of new information technologies. But radio remains one of the most useful and important means of communication for women. And ISIS has a program which is called Making Airwaves for Peace, which is training women in radio technology and radio program production in the conflict-ridden southern area of the Philippines. The mainstream journalists, and this is probably true everywhere, basically consider reporting on conflict. They report on the number of encounters, the clashes, the casualties. Seldom do they report on peace-building efforts, Seldom do they report on women's efforts in peace building. So one of the aims of this radio training is to enable women to be able to develop their own community radio programs to report on their peace-building efforts. And also, as a way of exchanging ideas about peace and building new notions of a new paradigm and new definitions of peace as social transformation. I'd just like to mention one last thing, one last program, which is not an ISIS activity. We heard earlier in the week from keynote speaker Gabby Vermont on Peace Women Across the Globe, and she described that in more depth. I would just like to mention that. I think it should also be recognized as part of the gift paradigm. Peace Women Across the Globe recognizes the millions of women who work day in and day out to promote peace, and to represent these women, to represent these millions of women, 1,000 women were nominated collectively for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2005. Kamala Bhasin from India, who is co-president of Peace Women Across the Globe, says, 1,000 is a symbol. It is a symbol of saying, peace is not a dramatic activity, but rather is accomplished bit by bit. Peace is not an individual act. You cannot make peace alone. The peace movement across the globe come from all countries and from all walks of life. And whatever their background, whatever opportunities they have, they are devoting themselves to a future free from peace. I wish I had time to read some of the inspiring stories in this book, which I actually, one of the things I did is I edited about 200 of the profiles of women in this book, the women from countries of the former Eastern Europe and Central Asia and Bosnia, and it was so moving. And I've also had the opportunity to meet in last January in Nairobi peace women from Africa, and it is absolutely amazing what they are doing. And I think we need to really build that solidarity with these women. I'm just going to end with a few words that were written by Genevieve Vaughan in one of her articles on the gift paradigm. I quote, "As we review the various aspects of life in the light of gift giving, I recommend that we see whatever gift giving we are doing in terms of a paradigm shifting practice rather than isolated individual choices or quirks. It is only by generalizing the paradigm and recognizing it as an already existing pattern that we can validate it as the way to peace."